Hi, my name is Tommy Bug, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon is a production by Neural, an agency that helps both brands and talent tell their story. To learn more, just visit neural.com. That's NERALLE.com. My guest this week, Tommy Bug, co-founder, CEO of Zoos Group. Thanks for coming in, mate. We're having a lovely chat beforehand. I've got to ask, though, does your mum still make those wonderful eclairs for you to this day?
You've done your research. Absolute pleasure to be on. I love this kind of setup, and it's great to connect with people in a similar place, similar industry and space. So the chocolate eclairs, they haven't been made for a while. When she found out I was selling them at school, she probably stopped making them.
I had a similar thing, actually. My mum, like, my family's got this sort of Anglo-European background. My dad's Greek, mum's sort of English. And mum's version of a fancy sort of lunch would be sandwiches, salami, like mozzarella, rocket, stuff like that, back when I was in year seven. And I noticed that people would always ask, like, what's that?
Yeah.
And so I started getting her to make extra sandwiches. And I think at the peak I got to, like, three sandwiches. And I'd get her to just stuff it full of things. And then I'd get them cut in half and sell those sandwiches. Yeah. And then use that money to go buy lunch from the tuck shop.
It's smart. It's the way. It's, you know, it's an entrepreneurial way. But yeah, I had people at school as well that would bring, you know, kind of Eskies and fill them up with cans of Coke and sell them for. One of my mates used to sell them for a dollar, and then 3 months later, one of my other mates started selling for 90 cents. So there was, like, you know, the competitive market at school, but that was in year seven.
And some old schoolmates will listen to this and remember a guy called Channy, and his parents owned a milk bar, and he would basically rack a 24-pack of Coca-Cola, and he'd sell that from outside of his locker. So you knew, like, he'd always just be hanging around the locker in high school, and you just come up to him and it'd be like a dollar for this, or he'd, like, expand to caramello koalas or something.
Yeah,
like that.
No, it's good. It's entrepreneur, it's purest form. So it's I'm just very lucky. I got exposed to it very early age.
So, as a kid, what do you reckon is your, like, earliest inception moment? What do you remember first?
In regards to in general, or
just life? Yeah.
Probably sport. I mean, I played basketball and football at a very young age, you know, around kind of four and five. My grandpa played footy. My dad was really sporty when he was younger. But, you know, dad's always kind of owned his own business as well. So a lot of flexibility with what he did. So I spent a lot of time with him when I was younger. So I guess, you know, earliest memories are really family orientated and sport.
What type of business did your dad run?
He runs a concrete sealer manufacturing business. So
really,
he's done that, but he's done a bunch of different things along his time. You know, mum was in doing dancing. She used to do ballroom dancing. She still does it now for some debs and whatnot. But, you know, she owned her own business doing dancing. So,
like, dance classes.
Dance classes, yeah. Dance classes. You know, teaching you know, people for their weddings and whatnot as well. So I've kind of always had that around me. That's motivated me, or, you know, I guess broadened my perspective on how the business works.
Did you do much work with your dad as a kid? Was that an environment you could do it in?
Yeah, I mean, it probably started from mowing lawns. So I used to get, what did I get? I reckon it was $50 for 4 or 5 hours.
It's decent.
So back then it was good. It would set you up for the canteen at lunch. And then, you know, I kind of molded into school holidays. Would always go down to the factory and help him kind of wherever I could be, and just be his little right-hand man. So yeah, it was good. I mean, you know, I love that. It probably taught me, you know, a lot of hard work, and it was, you know, it was hard. It was gritty work, you know, like,
it's, yeah,
in factories and whatnot. So it was, that's kind of my earliest memories there.
My dad had a printing factory, and he still to this day has, he had some, like, skin condition on his hand, or, like, it wasn't a skin condition. It would just be like a sensitivity in his hands where he'd feel the cold or heat more than most, because when you're working in that sort of factory, you get so much ink all over your hands, you're just constantly washing them, like with Solvol or whatever. But for me, like, my memory as a kid was the smell of, like, fresh paper. I don't know if you've ever smelt, like, really warm, fresh paper from a big printer. But it was something like, did you ever have anything like that working in the factory?
It's a smell?
Yeah, like a smell.
The solvent side of things resonates, because that's what you would use to clean The sealer, if you did get on your hands or clean your hands, if you had paint on or whatnot. So probably that's, yeah, that solvent smell.
Mm.
It's very unique, kind of strong smell.
It is, yeah. So when you say sealer, so basically your dad would go into a place where there was concrete flooring or something like that and they'd just essentially paint something that became like a resistance seal.
Put a sealer across the top of it to protect it, you know, anti-slip. You know, they'd even do different designs and whatnot as well. So he's been doing that for, 20-odd years now, so.
Nice. So your early studies, I think from memory, you're at Caulfield Grammar. You get drafted as an underage player to GWS. I think at the time you were known as one of the best nigglers in the competition. Had about 8 years across GWS, Carlton and Melbourne, finishing 2019. If you think about that whole period of time, that was really your first job out of school. What, in hindsight, was the biggest principle or lesson you learnt from those sort of organisations?
It's an interesting one because I think it's a journey of learning.
Mm.
I think school footy, you know, I was very I worked very hard as a junior, you know, and I played some really good footy as a junior, especially at Caulfield, captained the team. Probably, you know, if I look back, there's been a lot of fun memories and a lot of really good memories, but school footy, especially year 12, because I was already drafted, you didn't have to play Vic Country, regional. And you didn't have to play any representation footy. So, you know, I went from year 11 and it's got this real kind of college feeling to it where you got, you know, it's real brothers there where, you know, you go to school, you're studying with them, you play on Friday afternoon. So you've got a really good sense of, you know, really close relationship. And year 11, it was really good. I was building that. But then, you know, you get kind of yanked out of the team and you have to go play, as good as it was, playing, you know, representative footy. But it made me miss kind of that whole season and seeing what we could have achieved.
Mm.
And then year 12, you know, I was drafted in year, I think the end of year 11 was when I got drafted or found out. So then in year 12, obviously, you know, you don't play those representation teams because you're already drafted. So it's kept there for a spot for someone who wants to get drafted. So, yeah, so I mean, my best memories are definitely year 12 because I got to spend the whole time there and I captained the team and I had some really, really good, strong relationships with the guys that were, you know, that got me to the school and then also the guys that I'd, you know, became friends with as well. And then, you know, you go to Sydney and you live away from home for, you know, 5 years and play, you know, it's a startup club with a lot of guys that I grew up with. It, you know, it definitely, after being at Melbourne and Carlton, you know, you see it's definitely a different feeling than what those AFL clubs are. But the one thing I'm grateful for that Giants is a real family club. You know, they really hosted and looked after our families and our parents and our sisters and brothers and partners and whatnot. So I think the biggest learning experience, because I, you know, I try to reflect as much as I can. And recently, from a footy sense, the reflection was my years at Melbourne, I really learnt from the years at Giants. I was very naturally a fit person. So, you know, if I could, I think when I got to Melbourne, I really had to earn my games. It wasn't just gifted it where, you know, the Giants, I felt like a lot of us guys would, you know, we probably wouldn't have played if we were at other teams, even though we were really talented young kids. We're very skinny. I went to Giants at 69 kilos. So that was like a string bean, but,
shit.
But yeah, I think the biggest learning out there is just the work ethic when I got to Melbourne. And then, yeah, and then I guess post footy, like the biggest learnings I've had is just the life skills you learn that, you know, the leadership skills, the dealing with so many different personalities, hard work, sacrifice, the competitive side of it.
Mm.
Yeah, a lot of lessons I took from there that I use now that I'm really, really grateful for.
Yeah, I would have assumed that when you're in that environment and when people talk about leadership, it's really just confidence, being able to speak with confidence, because football clubs are intense environments. It's very unusual in comparison to other groups, whether it's a corporate group or whatever. So I would assume that would be one of the big things that you'd learn and bring into what you did afterwards.
Yeah, I think belief. There's confidence, there's belief. I think what I did was, you know, I watch a lot of other sports. You know, one of my biggest kind of inspirations is Conor McGregor. You know, he obviously does the work and then, you know, he's very out there or very confident or cocky in his predictions, but I think what I learned from him was, you know, I was very out there and I would, you know, I had a couple of things where on Instagram where I called out a player or, you know, I was a bit out there and some people would call me, you know, cocky or whatnot. But what I learned from him was if I was doing the work, it really gave me that belief to kind of do whatever I want and just be me.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. So I think belief, I think what I learned from that experience was if I put the work in, then I'm just going to be me and I just believe inside, you know, what I'm going to, where I'm going to get to, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny how the culture in AFL land is sometimes you can't put that sort of stuff out there on social media, but I always found that kind of funny. I feel like if I was a player, I'd kind of be like that as well.
Yeah, it's a weird one because you're in a team sport. It makes it, it does make it difficult.
Yeah.
But because I was watching a lot of individual sports, that's where that's where the confliction, the conflict came, sorry. But, you know, you look back, you look now and there's players that do it, and I think it's good for the game. I think we should encourage people to be themselves, whether that's, you know, people speaking out or people being arrogant or people being humble, whatever that is, you know, there's no right or wrong. So, you know, when I see it now these days, it's good to see. It's just authentic and, yeah, I think there should be more of it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think doing things that are a little bit above the norm and nice. I was a client of ours who I still work for with a little bit of contracting is CoinJar. They just sponsored Melbourne. And that was seen as very out there in the last week when they announced it. I was on with Neil Mitchell the other day and he was like giving me shit for it essentially. But I kind of I like that. I like it when clubs do that. I like it when players do that. Like, I feel like it was Sean McKernan or someone who spoke about the fact that when you're in that footy environment, everyone speaks in such, like, you're so media trained, you're enclosed, it's not real a lot of the time. And I find that when there's a bit of pizzazz about the way that people do things, it makes it more exciting.
Yeah, well, you see it in celebrations because guys are so, jacked up on adrenaline, they you'll just see them act naturally. So they might celebrate or, you know, go a bit far on some celebrations. But that's just what it is. And I think it's as authentic as it gets and it's what makes our game great. You know, we've got so many different people, so many different personalities. Why wouldn't we encourage people to
exactly
to do that?
Now, Zeus Group, I know when you were getting into this, you had some friends reach out. No doubt you would have picked up some things working with the management or agent team, essentially. What was the sort of aha moment when you realized this was a business and not just giving advice to mates? Because we had a similar thing in that we ran a podcast. We had someone ask us about, hey, how do you do a podcast, blah, blah, blah. But then it kept happening.
Yeah.
But no one would do anything about it. And I thought, you know what, fuck this. We're just going to say, we'll do it for you. We'll charge you this much extra than it costs. And it sort of just spun away from there. When was that moment for you?
Yeah, we obviously started helping out a friend at the start and then connected with, you know, my other partner now that's had a little bit of – or had a lot of experience, sorry, in advertising and marketing. And I guess we just saw the gap. You know, we started reaching out. We put together, obviously, a blueprint of what we wanted to achieve or what our service was going to be. And then started reaching out to different influencers at the time or different talent at the time. And this is, you know, 2.5, 3 years ago. So it's probably a lot less competition back then as well. And the industry was a lot more immature. And then just getting hits back from different influencers. And, you know, we flew one out from New South Wales at the time. And she's still with us now. And she's, you know, she's really, really good and gets it. And she's a bit of an OG. And she came across and, you know, our pitch went really well. And she was really excited. And she gave us a chance at the time. And, you know, we've got such good feedback from her now. But I think, you know, probably when she said, you know, I'm happy to come on exclusive and I want to sign with you guys and see, you know, what we can do together. That to that point was, you know, it went from we're just helping out a friend to this is a person that I had no relationship with. That
yeah,
now
that, that's
trusting us with their with their career. So
okay, so it's when and it's I guess a similar thing. It's when a total stranger who you haven't met, not a family, not an acquaintance of family or friends or whatever, is not indirectly paying you or putting their faith in you to work with you, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the first one to think, hey, we've got like something special here. But I think, you know, to have the actual aha moment where it's like, we've got a really, really good business is more, you know, we won a Deloitte Tech Fast 50 Award, you know, which recognises fastest growing technology companies in Australia. That was a big moment. You know, and then I guess just the constant signings of big name talent. You know, when we launched in America, another big moment for Zeus Group. And yeah, I think, you know, there's just these kind of different levels that you keep hitting and then, you know, you set your bar a little bit higher and then you hit that and the bar gets set a little bit higher. So I think for me, it's probably never going to feel like that just because I'm just, you know, I'm really passionate about getting the most out of myself. So it's always going to feel like, although I'm, you know, I'm really happy with where I'm at, I'm always going to be wanting to challenge myself even more.
Yeah, but that's why you're in business. It's like an element of personality. You're sort of always driven to improve things. I've got to ask, why the name Zoos Group?
Yeah, it just comes from some language. We have a number of different words me and my close friends use. And then, yeah, this was just one of them. It was really unique and it was us. So we just decided to go with that and it really grew. And, you know, it's kind of iconic, I guess, in regards to when you look at the other names that are out there.
Yeah, because I think you said in one interview that Jake Melsham or someone at the club would be like, Zeus.
Yeah, he'd walk in and, yeah, it was, well, it, you know, it'd come probably to the detriment at times for my footy because I couldn't walk into a room without someone yelling out that. But, you know, again, Jake, he's a funny guy and that's kind of what the footy culture is. But, yeah, that's what I mean. You know, it's in like you get notice for that and, you know, that's what we started getting noticed for and it's a very, very unique name.
Yeah, so it's a piece of lingo that you had amongst mates and then you were like, okay, well, I might just use this. I mean, it works. Names are hard and it stands out.
Yeah.
It definitely stands out.
Yeah.
So Zoos Group today, so you've been in the talent management business since 2018. I think I'm sure this number's not correct because it's always, I know from experience, changing on the website, but from what I counted, about 78 creators at the moment, and obviously a developing social media business as well. So I guess the thing that you guys do that I guess is similar to us is you're on both sides of the equation, which I really respect, is that you're both working with brands on social campaigns, but also, you know, working with talent on their own campaigns. What do you see as sort of your competitive advantage in the market? What's unique about Zoos?
Yeah, we've got a number of creators through here and the US. I think, you know, the most important thing for us is we've got a range of exclusive and non-exclusive talent, you know, meaning we can work with, you know, creators in any way which way. And, you know, important, I think the biggest thing for us is the personalized nature. So it doesn't matter how big Zoos gets, you know, myself and the agents are accessible and, you know, we're never going to overpopulate what we have without the right staff or service. So I think for me, it comes down to having that personalized nature and we've had that since day one. So if there has been any issues, you know, the ability to just pick up the phone and have a chat to me and work through together, I think's been a really big advantage. And it's created a really great relationship between me and the talent that we have.
Yeah.
You know, we're also doing, you know, building our own proprietary technology to help us identify talent. So, you know, that gives us a competitive advantage as we continue to scale. But yeah, like you said at the start, the ecosystem between the talent and the brands. We first started with the talent, you know, because at the time we identified that there wasn't a service in the market that was ethical and transparent.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I just think, you know, there was no ethical service at all that we could find, and that's kind of the feedback we were getting from, you know, my friends at the time and people in the market. So, you know, we basically put together something that was going to offer that offer transparency, so there was no question about that.
I think as well the fact that you've got background in being a talent yourself
is
an advantage.
That was key because, I mean, for me, although my management was really, really good when I played footy, I had two different managers and they were both great. There was still things that were lacking off that service and it was kind of that 360 degree approach. So that's what we offer to our talent now. We offer, you know, not just, I guess, deal negotiation. We offer a range of things to do with their finances, their accounting, their tax, any legal obligations they have, you know, offering either services there that can help them or referring them to partners that we use ourselves has been a big one. But yeah, again, back to the ecosystem, first started as a talent, offering a great service there, but, you know, quickly realized that there's two parts to that ecosystem and it's the brand on the other side that, you know, that are spending the money and they, you know, we want to offer value to them because we don't want to do one-off deals where we're trying to get the highest rates possible. We want to be compensated for the work, for the talent that's, you know, it's getting done. Because, you know, there is a lot of work from the talent point of view that people probably don't see. We want to offer, you know, a lot of value to the brands so they come back and spend and they're a long-term partner, not just a one-off a one-off campaign.
Yeah, I really respect that. I think if I think about it, you guys are probably one of the first independent agencies that went after the talent influencer route in Australia. There was a few others. Like, we've interviewed Jen Day, who focuses on day management. They've got, you know, a niche selection. I think she's got about 20 creators, and she only focuses on that. And she's also got a new company called Next of Kin, which is all about family management, essentially. But there was day management, yourself, and then when I can't really think of many others. There's some new ones like Born Bread and Amplify that have got into the TikTok space. But apart from that, it was all the classic like WME, IMG, Chic, all those agencies which are like multi-agent networks.
Yeah.
You know, they're international. They're big corporations owned by some parent company. They're not an independent. So I think that was the thing that I noticed about you guys is that independence that you have as an agency as being a real competitive advantage.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to Jen as well, you know, she's done a terrific job. Amazing. She's got a great, you know, really great reputation. I know Jen, she works really hard, and, you know, what she's been able to create is definitely admirable. And yeah, I think, you know, it's funny you talk about other agencies. We're talking about it off air before, but the US compared to Australia. So different. Yeah, the ability to, you know, collaborate with other agencies in the States of what, you know, I found has been really helpful and I guess really refreshing because, you know, at the end of the day, we're there to provide for the talent. So although there's, you know, you have competitors, you can also work together with the agency or your competitors, you know, to provide more value for talent. So, you know, in the States, we've got joint venture deals with different agencies, you know, where we can come together and pitch different jobs for each other's talent. In Australia, that doesn't really happen. I don't know why. I don't know if it's different or not. But I mean, from my point of view, always open to that conversation, whether it's with a, you know, someone that's we're aligned with or a competitor. You know, you kind of never know what can come from anything. So always keen to have conversations and like ourselves, you know, we're in this similar space as well, but the ability to, you know, bounce ideas off each other and learn, continue to learn is something that I think holds myself in good stead.
Yeah, I think what you say before, it's a weird thing in Australia. I think a lot of old school agencies get scared about doing stuff together, which I think is a naive way to go about it. I think that environment of the US is probably, you know, like if it's a win-win, you shouldn't be worried about things, people leaving or, you know, your efforts should be focused on purely the talent and the brand and maximizing everything for them. And I guess that was one of the things I was curious about is, you know, what do you see as the job to be done for Zoos Group in your little sphere of the world, and that may differ for talent and brands. Do you think it's like talent maximize their opportunity while they can in this space, and for brands, is it let's maximize sales awareness or something else in particular? How do you think about those two?
I think from the talent point of view, obviously, them, you know, the lifespan is the unknown, so making sure they're maximizing their opportunity and commercializing as much as possible. You know, but also setting themselves up for something outside or after their, you know, their influencing career. So whenever that may be. So, you know, we're always promoting or encouraging our talent to do things outside, not necessarily taking away from what they're currently doing, but, you know, having a really good think about what is after.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, for so long before, even before kind of we started, talent were doing things underpaid, undervalued. So, you know, what we wanted to do was make sure that they really understand what their value is and make sure we, you know, execute on that and make sure they get paid for their services. So I think from our point of view, we do a really good job of that, and that's why our talent are really happy. And then, you know, also from the brand point of view, you know, I guess our biggest feedback from brands is that they have a great experience with Zoos. So whether or not, you know, things don't always go perfect, but the one thing they're guaranteed, you know, is a high level of communication and us helping with the problem solving if there becomes a problem. You know, that doesn't happen often, but when it does, you know, we always make sure we're front of mind there, and we don't hide from that. And that's, you know, that's our number one kind of feedback from brands. We offer a great experience, and then also value too. So I think sometimes from a talent point of view or a talent agency point of view, you know, you can start demanding the highest rates possible. But if you continue to do that, you know, the brands isn't always going to see value or return on their investment. So it's just finding that happy medium where talent gets paid for their service, brands happy, get value, have a great experience, come back, you know, long-term partnerships on both sides.
You. Yes, you. Are you intrigued by this episode? If so, go to our footer on the website,
neuralle.com, neural.com. We're going to give you an insight each week. It's going to be on business, marketing, or a topic that we covered in the episode at all. We'd love your support, and it would help us in developing the intellect around this series. But without going on too much longer, let's get back into this episode.
Obviously, you've had 3 years now. You're an indirect outsider in a way, in that, you know, you've had the experience as a customer being a talent, and now you've come into this space and you're offering a service as an independent agency. Now you're on both sides of the equation. I guess I'm curious, what's been the best and worst thing about dealing with both sides?
The best thing, yeah, the best thing on the talent side of things is having everything done for you. you know, not really having, as long as you trust, you know, I trusted my management and had a really good relationship with them, and, you know, our talent, it's very similar. So I think from that point of view, just not having to handle with admin or not having to handle with everything, and knowing, trusting that everything's taken care of. The worst thing as a talent myself, I can't really think of too many things. I mean, at the time I was, you know, super young, and I was just pretty grateful to have everything catered for. And then I guess on the other side of the agency side of things, the best thing for me working with talent is just, I guess, the creative side of it. You know, you're working with so many cool individuals, so many young people that they just kind of, they're so creative in different angles. It's not just it's not just one dimensional. There's, you know, people doing podcasts, people doing video casts, people doing, you know, influencer stuff, events. We've got people over in this, even if, you know, not with us, but you look at Jake Paul and what he's doing with the boxing stuff. It's just a whole different dimension. So what I love to do is connect with people and see how they think. And really just, I guess, just challenge the status quo in a sense. And then the worst thing, there's not too many bad things, but there's, you know, there's a lot of different personalities. So for me, again, you know, back to football, I've dealt with a lot of different personalities. So it's been really, really, it's held me in really good stead. But I wouldn't say that's a bad thing. I would just say it's something that, you know, that you have is to challenging
to,
sometimes.
Yeah, you have to learn to deal with. I guess I'm curious, when you mentioned Jake Paul before and you think about the creators, that, because I really respect, you know, people can hate on the Paul brothers, but they are amazing marketers and salesmen. You know, the whole Triller thing, the fact that Logan is fighting Floyd Mayweather is just ridiculous to me. Like that we're in this era where a YouTuber becomes an exhibition boxer and is probably going to make tens of millions of dollars just from fighting this guy. Who are the people that you are really fascinated by as talent? And it could be someone that you're managing, but someone that you're not managing, and it doesn't have to be any reason why, but I guess I'm curious, who are you fascinated by the most at the moment?
Yeah, it's, you know, Jake and Logan, firstly, they have done things really differently, but again, those guys, probably them two, yeah. Like, to be honest, it's them two. It's, you know, I had the pleasure of, you know, connecting with them really, really briefly in Coachella just after I finished football. And it was pretty much just a high and by conversation. But they don't surprise me. What they do is they inspire me, but they also amaze me with how much knowledge they have of the internet. You know,
they're so clued in.
Yeah, they really know, like, everything from Jake's point of view. You know, it's just, even though it looks so, you know, it is very authentic what he does, I feel like, but it's very strategic. Mm. And just the way he can push and pull levers is just phenomenal. And it's what's, you know, it just reinforces how powerful social media is. The fact that, like you said, YouTubers can be boxing, you know, one of the greatest of all time. And then, you know, you've got him calling out Conor McGregor, who's one of the greatest of all time in the MMA space, is crazy. But again, it's going to continue to happen because there's so much attention, and that's what social media is, it's attention.
But also, there's anything is possible with the internet. And that's the thing that I've learned. And, like, Logan is the one who really fascinates me. I think what he did with NFTs, the Pokemon cards, all that stuff, to me, blew my mind away as to what was possible. And I remember when it was happening, I was speaking to creators, because we've got some creators who have sort of posts that are like the most liked post in Australia on TikTok and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's something here, and I've said the idea of NFTs to a few of them for a while now, and just experimenting with this sort of stuff, and to think a bit bigger, and I guess those two, and particularly Logan, helps with that. I think for sure.
Yeah, I the thing with Logan that impresses me with is just how he kind of transformed his image. He went from that vlogger to, you know, that YouTuber to now he's just got, you know, he's got the podcast with Impulsive, but he's almost like, you know, it went for those guys have, I don't know, they've been like, they've got a lot of haters, but you know, the one thing I feel with Logan now is he's got a lot of supporters.
I think
that love him.
Well, I couldn't stand Logan. Like, I think about Logan went from that guy who filmed someone who hung themselves in Japan to like a, just like a dude that you can't really, I find it hard to hate him now.
Yeah,
he's actually quite aware of himself and quite switched on.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like I said, 2 years ago, I would have said, oh, fuck that Logan Paul guy. But a year later, I was watching the Impulsive show. I was watching his vlogs. Like, I actually thought he was very, very smart.
Yeah. No, his Impulsive vlogs are really informative. He does it with some of the biggest, I guess, creators and celebrities in the world. But, yeah, I mean, those guys, again, like, I've just got nothing but love for what they've done in the space. You know, they've kind of paved the way for all these other influences that are coming along now. So, yeah, just impressive.
When it comes to prospecting talent, I think that you said to me that's still one of the things that you're involved in is sort of talent acquisition. I can imagine you and the other co-founders would be involved really on that talent acquisition and sales side of things. How do you think about that process? Because I know I went through a stage where for me it was all about just finding fucking new people on TikTok and checking their stats and what's their engagement rate and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, you're in a position now where you've been doing that for probably a couple of years and you've learned the ins and outs and you also have a big roster. So you have to be quite selective, let's say, about who you bring on, and there has to be something about them. What does your process look like in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when I started, it was very, very manual. So you'd go on YouTube, you'd go on Instagram, you'd, you know, scout through kind of talent and their content and see if they would generate, you know, at the end of the day, was it, you know, can we offer a value to them? Can our brands that we're working with, will they work with this talent? And then also, you know, can the talent generate revenue and is the effort versus reward there? So, I mean, very, very manual at the start. And I think, I don't know if I mentioned it already, but off air, I mentioned it in terms of the technology stuff. So, you know, we're building technology that helps us identify talent based off analytics. So it's very automated what we do now in terms of the talent stuff. But it's still, again, you know, it's got to be super personal when more from the data point of view is automated. But then, you know, the reaching out process is still the same. And I think it will still be the same for a long period of time just because that face-to-face connection and making when you catch up with someone, just getting that vibe and making sure that, you know, that they kind of like what they're about to get involved in. I think that's going to be there for a long period of time still.
Do you guys have like high watermarks on a certain indicator that would make you approach someone? Is it an engagement rate? Is it a follower rate? Is it views or impressions? How do you think about that? Because that's the trickiest part.
It is. I guess without giving away too many trade secrets, you know, obviously the following is a big one, but you know what I'm seeing from brands now is that it's the engagement side of things. So it's you know, I guess it's probably it's not a secret, but the engagement side of things is obviously, you know, a key indicator because brands that want to spend they want their, you know, the followers to be engaging with the influencer.
Yeah, I think when I first started, for me it was the cliche case of okay, does this person have a certain amount of followers or whatever it may be? And then you start to get into more and more brand campaigns and you realize they don't give a fuck about that. They just want to know how many views are they getting? What's the engagement rate? Is it worth it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And what you'll find is...
Where's the split of the audience as well?
Yeah. What you'll find is, you know, brands usually know what they want. You know, from our point of view, we work on the creative for brands, you know, occasionally, but, you know, most brands come in and know exactly what they want. So... it's about facilitating that and making sure that, you know, we hit those KPIs that they're after.
Yeah.
Some it's ROI, some it's just, you know, reach. So
conversely with brands, how's your go-to-market changed from the beginning to now? Like I caught up with Jen recently a couple, maybe a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And she was telling me about how when she first started out, it was all about, you know, she was managing these Instagram creators, and 10% was like inbound and 90% was outbound activity. But now it's like 90% inbound and 10% inbound. Like that's a general thing when a market gets more mature. So a lot of brands come to her now. Obviously, she's going to reach out to brands that she feels that there's some sort of alignment.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting to hear that insight around the change in perception from brands with influencers. So I guess when you first started out, do you feel that it was somewhat similar, or how did you go about interacting with brands?
I wouldn't say that it's too different. If anything, I'd probably say it was a little bit more in reach versus when we first started.
Mm.
And a little less outreach because, again, there was less competition. So I felt like the influencers we got at the time, you know, we had a system where the brands would reach out to the influencer but would reach out to us.
Yeah.
And now what I'm finding is obviously more competition. But I guess we put a heavy focus on outreach. So we're continually every single week. The team works so hard on finding new brands that are spending in the e-commerce space or that have budget in the digital space.
But also as you scale as well, because, you know, when you first started out, it was all you doing sales and talent acquisition, and now you've got a whole team.
Yeah.
It you go from being more on the defensive to being more on the offensive. You've got this roster now.
Yeah.
You've got way better creative capabilities internally, and you can go to brands and start to chat to them more about that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, obviously when we started, we had no staff. We're doing everything ourselves. Now we've obviously built, you know, we built a really, really special team. I couldn't be more excited with the people we have on board. And that's, you know, one thing I've learned. Again, I think I said at the start, having great people and having great staff that, you know, emulate the same values that I hold and, you know, that we want to continue to hold as we grow, which is that personalized nature, you know, and that hardworking kind of accessible trait as well. I think it's been really good. But yeah, again, team, a really, really special team. So I'm really, really proud of them.
So the product expansion, we know about the US. I know you're eyeing off Asia as well. I think in one of the interviews you may have mentioned that. You mentioned before about this development of technology internally. I guess I'm curious in terms of tracks that you're going to go down, why expand horizontally, let's say across geographies versus vertically across industries? I was almost surprised about you guys going to the US first as opposed to just getting into like managing footy talent. Like, do you have that in your mind in the long term? Or is it so regulated and complex and dull that it's not something that you consider?
No, not at all. We've done some we've completed some trial campaigns with footy players. And there's definitely opportunity there. And we work with some direct talent ourselves and with the agents, and then we also work with a large agency that manage majority of the talent here in Melbourne.
Mm.
But I guess, you know, what I see is the opportunity, what I feel like, is still in that influencer space. It's not to say we're not going to delve into different industries like football or music or whatnot. But I just think, you know, for us, we're doing what we're doing really, really well. And, you know, we felt like the, you know, the proof of concept, we really completed that. And then, you know, you look at the US and it's the market's 50 plus times bigger. You know, you look at the UK, again, 50 plus times bigger. So, you know, I guess scaling. And I guess our vision to be, you know, global and not just be here in Australia is important too, because if you see America and the UK as being, you know, a lot bigger markets, a lot bigger spend, more talent, more brands, then, you know, we just felt like we could scale a lot quicker than here.
That makes sense. I mean, at the end of the day, there's way more opportunity in the US and Europe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you talk about delving into other industries, our vision was more, let's get into the US, let's scale there, and then let's look at, you know, US sports rather than Australian sports. Again, just having kind of that global vision and having that kind of bigger picture vision rather than kind of, you know, just being here in Australia and just kind of having that. I wouldn't say closed mind. I just feel like Australia is very small in comparison to the rest of the world. So
it is. It's very enclosed.
Yeah.
We are the lucky country. Life is easy. Things, you know, the top four companies in Australia listed on our stock exchange are the banks. Like it's not... You know, it's not as innovative and exciting as, say, perhaps the US market.
That's what's exciting about the US. Looking at going back there in about a month's time, and the one thing, I've been to America a bunch of times, but the one thing that happens when I go there and come back is it really puts things in perspective of how small Australia is. It's great though. You know, you come back here and feel so lucky that we're such a safe country.
But it's a beautiful place, but when it comes to business,
to business and career and opportunity, if anyone that hasn't been to the US at some point, I'd highly recommend getting
there. If you go over to the US, you'll probably get your jab before, you could probably get your jab over there before you get it here.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the regulations are, but I'm sure if I have to have it, I'll
we've had some people that we know in radio that have gone over for a gig, and on the second day they were able to get their Pfizer vax or Moderna, or I don't know who, what's the one that we're meant to be getting here, not AstraZeneca. because people are freaking out about blood clotting or whatever. But yeah, you can go over there and you can get your jab within a day.
Yeah.
Just book it in.
So, yeah, I know. I haven't given too much thought to it.
Do you have like a particular affinity for anywhere in the US? Do you prefer East Coast, West Coast, the South?
I love LA. I love LA.
You love LA?
Yeah, I love LA.
Why is that?
I've just been there a bunch of times. I feel like it's really cool. You know, there's in terms of just everyone goes to LA to accomplish something. I feel like they go there with a real goal. So everyone there is really driven. It's fun, you know. It's like a theme park for adults. You know, there's clubs. There's people that are. We've got some really good relationships there. You know, I know some musicians over there. So the influencers over there. It's just really cool. You know, I guess from my point of view, it's kind of like, you know, what you see in movies and whatnot. So it's fun in LA. But I mean, New York's got it as well. It's just LA is like a lot more beachier and hotter. And,
do you have like a particular area you like hanging about?
West Hollywood's kind of like the central place. I think West Hollywood's cool. Yeah. Like Beverly Hills we've got an office in Beverly Hills, so that's a really cool space there. But nice. I think West Hollywood's kind of, you know, where everything's happening.
Okay. Have you, out of interest, you've spoken to your team, you obviously speak to your team daily. I think you mentioned that your US guy had just come over and got out of quarantine or something like that. What's been the report from them about what things have been like in the last year over there?
Yeah, USGM has just got back. He 2 weeks of quarantine in Sydney and he just flew back to Melbourne today. So spent some time with him this morning and then I'm going to go see him after this. But they said it was really tough. I mean, really, really tough over kind of last year. But again, everything's opening up now. I think he just told me this morning that masks aren't on as of next week or maybe 2 weeks.
Wow.
And they're pretty much back to normal. So. Wow. I mean, it's good timing considering I'll probably be over there in a month's time, and I definitely don't want to quarantine. But yeah, he said it was really tough. Like, I mean, all our staff worked remotely from home, so they didn't work from the office or anything like that, and haven't for probably a year now or just over a year.
So the other, I guess, question I have around product is you've got this internal product that you use for analytics of talent. Do you think in future you would consider selling that to other agencies or brands, because it's quite a fragmented market in, you know, you've got all these different tools, even just in the TikTok space. I think I counted the other day, there was 3 or 4 different tools and a lot of them are hit and miss. We use 2 just for TikTok because one does one thing and one does another. How have you thought about that technology product, particularly because it would offer immense scale?
It would. Yeah, we've definitely thought about it. We have the mindset about technology since day one, but now we've built it to a point where we use it to our advantage. So, you know, we definitely don't want to be giving it to our competitors to give them an advantage. So for us, obviously now we're using it internally and we'll continue, but, you know, it's market changes all the time. So it just depends, you know, what the next 6, 12, 24 months looks like. But there's definitely the option in future to either sell or, you know, set up a subscription model where brands or talent can use, you know, what we're doing at the moment. But the really cool thing about what we're building is obviously we own it and we're building it, but we can customize it to exactly what we want.
Yeah, that is a good point. And it's tough when you are an agency as well to then really would bastardize what you guys are doing essentially if you were to sell it to other people. So I can definitely see that. I'm curious, like I really am fascinated by what people like Gary Vee have done in the space in terms of the talent game. I've tried to read as much as I can around this space. There's the guy who founded CAA, which was sort of the agency in LA in the 90s and early 2000s. Are there particular leaders that you look to in this space that you really respect at all?
Definitely respect all those guys that have, you know, been there and done it, or been there and, you know, built an agency. But I've, you know, I find my inspiration from people in different industries because yeah. I like to just innovation in general. So, you know, you look at guys like, well, Gary Vee is a perfect one. He definitely innovates. You look at guys like Elon Musk. And then in the sports world, you look at guys like Connor. You look at, there's some other ones I can't think of. Even like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and stuff. You just look at, I just get, you know, different inspiration off different people and then try to, you know, relate it back to what we're doing and see if I can get a different spin on things. But I guess for anyone in the actual industry, not really. you know, it's not kind of one person that yeah. that I look at and go like, wow.
It's not really an industry that's been innovated at, has it?
Until, not really until recently. You know, there's yeah. there's definitely some agencies in America that do it really well and some kind of boutique agencies that do it well, but there's no one really combining that technology with the talent and the brand side. So
are there particular agencies you've noticed in the US that you really like?
Yeah, there's a few that do it. I don't really want to give them a plug, but I'm constantly looking at what other people are doing in the industry. You know, even here in Australia, you know, I'm looking at people pivot. You know, 12 months ago, people weren't doing TikTok, or 18 months ago, people weren't doing TikTok.
I know, right?
Now there's specialty divisions in TikTok, so it's just like, you know, it's ever learning and just making sure that you're up to date with the market and know exactly kind of who's leading it. But again, at the end of the day, we want to be market leaders in what we do. So
you do. You've done a few of these interviews now. I know there would be questions that you get repeatedly. The classic one is just questions about footy. I'm curious, you know, this is an opportunity now for me to ask you, what's a question you wish people ask you more about when doing these interviews? Feel like you could talk about for half an hour. Like, we had a photographer in a while ago and he talked about personal finance for like 45 minutes.
What would I talk about? I mean, it's got nothing really relevant to what I'm doing, but I love, you know, I love UFC. I love boxing. So I just love kind of, you know, that aspect. I could sit there all day, talk about that stuff.
So you must have like a UFC fight pass and you must watch it.
Oh, yeah, I've got UFC fight pass. I watch everything on YouTube to do with UFC. I just think it's interesting. I just think, you know, you're looking at people that train so hard for a specific cause, and it's just – yeah, it's just, you know, you look at all other sports and I think from a UFC point of view, you just see guys that that literally, you know, are doing everything for their livelihood. So yeah. There's no real – and from, you know, I guess the thing I can relate to it is the training side of things as well. Not that I do anything like them, but just, you know, training in a professional environment and seeing what it takes to get yourself to a level and then compete. So then you've got that competitiveness, the competitive element of what they do. But theirs, compared to what I did at footy, is just on a whole nother level. So
yeah,
it's just awesome to see the mindset, how people adapt.
There's some amazing theater about it.
Like, and I like that part of it too.
Pardon?
I like that part of it.
I love that part. I've always been – my mind was always blown when I learned that you know, the UFC was not owned by Dana White. It was owned by WME, which is an agent business. And yeah. I was always fascinated by, oh, okay, wow. So you can get into owning assets in this space and doing cool things, which are very unique. And, yeah, Conor McGregor's the OG when it comes to promotion. I actually got fed a clip on – I was on Facebook for the first time in a while the other day, and I was on the video section, and the first thing that came up was Conor's fight with Cowboy Cerrone. I think it was a couple months ago or something like that.
Cowboy Cerrone, it was Jan 2020.
Fucking beat him in 40 seconds, man. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing. Like you said, the theatre of it's unbelievable.
And he's old, you know?
No, he's 32. I think he's 32.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's exciting that you can, you know, that WME can delve into different angles or different divisions. And that's, I guess, yeah, if you think back to what your question was before, what, you know, what's impressive, you look at IMG and WME and what they've done. They started off with the talent side of things, now in production, they're in, you know, they're a whole range of different things. So I think that's really cool. The whole UFC story in general is amazing, how Dana and the Fertitta brothers basically bought it for, I think, a few mil, and then they pumped in, I think it was like 30 or 40 mil, and it was yeah. about to go bankrupt, and then they started the Ultimate Fighter, which was a TV show
uh-huh.
about, you know, contenders making it to the end, almost like a Big Brother setup, but with fighting. And then that's what, you know, kickstarted their ratings. Yeah. And then now, you know, they sold, I think it was $4.2 billion or something just like recently, that. Or they sold a portion of the business for that. So look at that whole story. It's just,
it's,
you know,
amazing.
It's insane. And then, yeah, Dane Hunt, just looking at, you know, what he's done and how much of a cult figure he is really cool to see too.
I would say that there is a local brand that Jacob introduced me to that I think has gotten into that, and was a Unified Group. Yeah, so they originally started as sort of like a metal band sort of promoter and got into all areas of like record producing. They do events. Like, I think they also own like parts of, you know, Mr. Yum? You know, like you got to go check in and
menus. All every time you check in now, it's Mr. Yum.
Yeah, like if you the menus and stuff like that. So they're a really fascinating business. We've tried to interview the founder, and I know he's a busy guy. So I'd say brands like that, or businesses like that, the ones that intrigue me is when they've gotten into other little things as well as, you know, just managing people, of course. Right, rapid fire questions to finish things off. What's the morning and evening routine look like?
Morning, evening routine. I wouldn't say I've got anything necessarily set in stone. I've had things in the past. Like obviously, when I played football, I, you know, had a proper routine. Now when I finished, I try to keep a routine, but now it's kind of, you know, I wake up at a, you know, a decent hour, 7:30, and then I either train in the morning or evening. So I think nothing's set in stone, but I usually try to do exercise either morning or night.
Okay. And any particular exercise you're leaning to at the moment?
Weights, tennis. I love tennis. Yeah. Okay. I never played when I was younger, but me and my three closest friends, we're very competitive people. We've got a really good competitive friendship at the moment, and we all play tennis. So
during winter as well.
During winter, yeah. Well, the Melbourne Park, I've got the indoor court.
Okay, of course. All right. Best purchase under $200.
Best purchase under $200.
Could be a food item. Could be a gadget. Could be an experience.
Actually, I have to go with YouTube Premium.
You don't see ads. I know. Yeah. Fuck, it's so good.
So I used to watch ads, and I was just like, you know, I've got Netflix, got Stan, got KO, all them, and I don't have YouTube Premium.
When did you convert out of interest?
Oh, like...
recently?
Nah, 2 years ago, and a half years ago.
For me, it was during COVID, I reckon, late last year, and I was like, because they were smashing people with ads, like you would watch, because they'd started doing mid-rolls as well as pre-rolls and end-rolls.
Yeah, that's what got me. Like, I have sometimes three.
I had videos, like, because I was watching 20-minute videos, and there would be 10 ads, and I was like, this is ridiculous. I can't deal with this.
Yeah. I also see it from the other point of view as well, and I kind of like
I totally get why they do it and why they had to do it, because they had so many brands pull out because of COVID.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just it's so worth the $20 or whatever it is per month. I think it's like $19.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it's definitely worth it.
All right, last question for you. If you were to pick a podcast, doco or movie that you've watched in the last year that you'd highly recommend to people, what would it be?
Oh, wow. Podcast, doco. It's a tough one, that one.
I'll give you a sample of one that I really enjoyed. Was the Michael Jordan doco came out probably around this time last year.
I'm a LeBron fan, so I started playing basketball because I loved Jordan when I was younger, but I just love LeBron, man. Did you see his game yesterday? Hit the game winner.
I'm not a massive basketball guy, but growing up in the 90s and having the name Jordan with Michaelides as the last name, everyone's like, oh, Michael Jordan, and I just had this affinity for Michael Jordan.
Yeah. No, I think that was really good, really well put together, but I'd probably say maybe the Connor one. The Connor one's really cool.
Okay.
Connor McGregor, have you seen
it?
Yeah. They've got footage of him before he even fought in the UFC.
So I know.
They obviously knew he was going to be, when he didn't have tats or anything. So they must have known he was going to be
Yeah. But, and I was trying to think, like, they was filming him when he was sort of living in that, not commission flat, but just the shithole in Ireland.
Yeah.
And he sort of had like, he was so young, he had like acne scarring or something like that. He had no tats. He had like a shaved head. He looks like shit. But it's quite amazing to see the mentality and belief that he had at that age.
Yeah, he hasn't changed much. It's good to see. So probably that one, I would say.
Okay. Tommy, thank you so much for coming in. Where can people find you and Zoos Group on the interwebs?
Yeah, so I mean, on Instagram, Zoos Group, or on mine, I got obviously Tommy Bug is in Instagram. So you can see there, or zoosglobal.com.
Okay. Tommy, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for checking out this episode. If you do like it, please subscribe, and of course, like if you're watching the YouTube video as well. We'd really appreciate that. You can also find our Clips channel in the description. For audio, if you're not already listening, you can search Uncommon on Pocketcast, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts quite easily. For video, if you're not watching, you can search Uncommon on YouTube. And for behind the scenes takes and clips on social media, then definitely check out at @uncommon_show on Instagram. But otherwise, look, thanks so much for tuning in. And until next time, thanks for listening.